If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. They're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into episode 205 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how sad are you about all these pitching prospect injuries that we're dealing with right now, with the latest one being Ricky Tiedemann?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. It feels like the injuries are up more than ever, and you have to wonder if it's a pitch clock thing, if it's just in general we're seeing pitchers throw harder than ever, putting more pressure on their arm than ever. So many different things that could be affecting pitchers, and it's certainly hard to see, but it seems like pretty much at this point that if you're going to make it to the pro level as a pitcher, like, you're going to have Tommy John at least one time. So it's almost better just get it out of the way. Like, Dylan Lesko, like, you know, he'll be back later this year. He got out of the way in high school. Hopefully he'll never have to have it again and be good, but, you know, it's really tough. Hopefully Tiedemann's injury is not too bad, but we'll see.
Maybe the answer to this is, if you think your kid has some talent as a pitcher, just, like, have them get TJ at, like, 11 or something. Just get it out of the way, you know?
Get an extra brace.
I know. Get it out of the way early so you don't have to deal with it when you're, you know, later part of high school or college or in the minor leagues or whatever. But
all right,
I think somebody put like G-Rod and Yuri and Gavin Williams and all these guys. He had the top ones in the, some bubble wrap or something. Someone protect these guys. Can't have any more of these guys going down. We already get, luckily, Painter maybe avoided TJ, you know, hopefully. But Spino obviously out for over a year. We're still kind of waiting to see how long Tiedemann will be out. Hopefully it's nothing too serious because I'm less love me some Tiedemann. So, but we'll see. Hopefully by the time this comes out on Friday, we'll have some clarity on that. But who knows? But we get a lot of fun players. We have some other top pitching prospects we're talking about today. A lot of, you know, prospect promotions and debuts recently. Some hitters, some pretty fun hitters that are kind of, some are up, some are down. Same thing with some pitchers. So a lot of fun names on the docket today. But before I get into those, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris at RotoClay. I'm at EricCross04. The show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. Drop that 5-star review. Check out my Patreon and Chris's Substack for more work from each of us, including all of our prospect and dynasty rankings. And before we get in the show, we want to say a quick word about our friends at Underdog Fantasy. If you sign up using the promo code Toolshed, you'll receive a 100% deposit match up to $100, and that can be used for any of their fun fantasy games, including a lot of individual player pick'ems that Chris and I have both been doing a lot of. Sign up today using that code Toolshed at play.underdogfantasy.com/P-the-Toolshed. All right, let's start with Bryce Miller here, who got the debut yesterday and looked really, really good. Yes, it was against Oakland. I get it. But Oakland's lineup actually isn't terrible. It's not like Detroit bad or Kansas City bad right now. But 10 strikeouts over six innings. They have one run, only allowed two base runners, two hits, no walks. He went 70%. Where was he at? Right around 70% on the fastball, which is, you know, not too surprising. He's one of the better fastballs in the minor leagues. They mix in a cutter, a slider, only threw one changeup, but this guy's, you know, Chris, Miller's been elite stuff for a while now, and the performance was pretty good entering this year. You know, people are like, oh, he didn't look good in Double-A this year, and he really did. He had 6.41 ERA in four starts, but this is one where, hey, the stuff is really good. We've seen that. This could be a really big impact arm for Seattle.
Yeah, he kind of struggled a bit in Double-A with the home run ball. That was really the biggest flaw. He was just kind of leaving some pitches over the zone, and they were getting hit. And it's interesting when you look at kind of the landscape and everything, and then to see like what he did. It's not really surprising, in my opinion, that he came out and dominated. His fastball is extremely good, and that helps him a ton. When you can set batters up like that, and that's exactly what he did. The first time through the lineup, he was throwing his fastball like 83% of the time. I was like, is he not even going to throw any secondaries at all? And then, like, after he did that, like, he changed his sequence completely the next time around, and it was, obviously, it worked well. I think that we probably see Bryce Miller stay up for most of the season. And I don't see really a way he goes back down. I mean, it's highly possible, but I don't see why they would, to be honest. At the end of the day, like, I just think that this is such a talented arm. Like, his four seam is one of the best in baseball, and that seems pretty aggressive to say, but it came out and had a 136 stuff plus on it, like for Eno's model, which is pretty insane. It had 21 inches of induced vertical break, which is like Garrett Cole elite. Like, that's number one in baseball, actually, according to Lance Brozdowski. Minimum 50 pitches thrown. Like, that's elite. And he's got the lowest release height of any pitcher in the top 15 in IVB. IVB means, like, basically looking at induced vertical break, the idea of the ball seeming to carry at the top zone, almost like a rise effect of what you're looking at. So you think Garrett Cole's fastball and how good it is. And crazy enough, like, Miller's rates better from a statistical standpoint there. So when he can set batters up like that, dude, he's got a cutter. It's a really good pitch. Like, his arsenal is just set up to let him excel at the big league level. And I think he's going to do that. I think I've been too low on him, and I had him like as my 60th best prospect. And that's crazy, but it's too low.
Yeah, no, this is a really good pitcher, really good. I see the fastball is incredible. He probably mixes in the secondaries a bit more moving forward. I don't think he's a stay 70%+ fastball, but hey, when your fastball is that good, like, why not throw it a ton? I look at in the debut, they allowed one single off of it. That was it. 37.9% whiff rate. Like, is this a really, really elite pitch? High spin, 2576 RPMs on the fastball. Slider and cutter are pretty good as well, especially both of them pretty much. So cutter was really, got hit around a little bit. That's where he gave up the double on, but that was about it for damage against him in that debut. And yeah, I don't see a reason why he can't look at the back end of this rotation. You know, I mean, yeah, you got Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Bryce Miller, and Marco. Yeah, they're probably, you know, Marco's probably locked in unless he's really starts struggling, but they were really not having, they had like Chris Flexen in that role at times, like that number five spot, but they didn't really have a locked in guy. And obviously, you know, I think they thought Robbie Ray was going to come back, but obviously now he's having Tommy John surgery. And then they brought up Easton McGee, which doesn't that sound like the name, like when you on the create a player on MLB the show, it's like the generic name. It starts with Easton McGee.
I could see that.
Right. This looks like the generic name you start with when you're creating a player, but he was even up for a couple starts, and obviously Ray out for the entire year now and part of next year. Made sense. And, you know, Miller leapfrogged, you know, Emerson Hancock, who's just kind of meh right now in the upper minors. So, yeah, and unless he really, really struggles, I don't see a reason why he can't stay up, you know, moving forward. And I think he'd be a pretty solid impact arm. Like, we've seen the strikeouts have been there consistently throughout the minor leagues. In 162 innings in the minors, he had 196 strikeouts. You know, didn't really walk too many either. Kept the walk rate in check, well under 10%. So this is a pretty good arm. And, you know, is he going to be an ace frontline guy? No. But could he maybe be a back end at the SP2? Maybe you're even a high end SP3, something in that range, I think is pretty fair for Bryce Miller. And yeah, I like him a fair amount. So he's a great target everywhere right now. Next one, Louis Varlin. I've been getting a lot of questions about him. Where are you at on a Louis Varlin? He's been one that, you know, I've always liked a bit, but I think I've always been a bit lower on Louis Varlin than most. Like, where are you at on Varlin right now, Chris?
Well, he did some things to change his arsenal this year. And, you know, I wasn't kind of in your boat. I was like, I liked him and I didn't like love him. But this year has been completely different. If you look at the numbers, you probably wouldn't think that. Like, you look in his AAA, ERA is 4.20, and that's across 15 innings, three starts. He has a 1.83 FIP, which is encouraging, and a 40.3% strikeout rate to a 6.5% walk rate. And then his two starts in the majors haven't been great either. 10.2 innings, 5.91 ERA, a 1.50 WHIP, but you see a 3.23 Sierra there, which is encouraging. 30% strikeout rate, 6.4% walk rate. The stuff plus is what popped off to me. It's like, man, like, this guy is changed, and the stuff is completely there with Louis Varlin. He was one of the best arms in AAA based on stuff plus, with a, you know, graded plus fastball, near plus slider, and an average cutter or better. Like, it looked really good when he was rolling a 122 stuff plus fastball, 119 slider, 100 being average, 133 changeup, excuse me, really good as well. So when you see those numbers, you're like, okay, like, he's pretty legit. So the stuff has improved too, which is encouraging. You look at last year's, and he significantly improved those pitches and the stuff for those pitches. So I'm buying into Louis Varlin, and I think that, and he's another one I've been too low on. And he is inside my top 100 now, because all the pitch data just suggests that he's that good. While the results haven't been there, the strikeouts are there, the stuff is there. I'm pretty in.
Yeah, I'm definitely more in than I was. I mean, I'm still not like super high on Louis Varlin, but I like the stuff. And what I really like, when you look at the arsenal, four pitch, four seamer, cutter, changeup, and slider, he's got kind of three different velocity ranges there. Like, both the slider and the change are around like 84 miles an hour or so, like 83 to 86. And then the four seamer is at 95. So you got nice, you know, on the changeup from the fastball, about 11 miles an hour of velocity separation. I like that. And the cutter is right, kind of right in the middle, right around 90 miles an hour. So you really got, and he has pitches that move both ways. The fastball around 95 is very, I think, a pretty good pitch there. Runs the cutter down, fastball up, change up down, and slider he's been dropping down below the zone. Like he's the heat map on that, the red part is below the zone for the slider. So he likes dropping that down outside the zone. Change up, drop in for strikes. So, and he's just the guy's always had pretty solid command too. And it was kind of like one of those, like, all right, he's got good command, but the stuff was kind of mid. But now the stuff is taking a tick up, like you mentioned, Chris. So he's definitely has some intrigue here. And I think he's another one, like with Bryce Miller, that I think he could stick in this Twins rotation here for a little bit. Like you look at, let's see, they got obviously kind of similar situation, right? The other four kind of locked in right now, or at least three with Lopez, Gray, and Ryan. You know, Ober's back in the rotation now. But I think you could see him because, you know, Molly's hurt again. Like, when is Molly not hurt? Maeda's, you know, back on the IL. I don't think we're seeing Paddock ever again. So,
no.
I mean, remember when Chris Paddock was a thing for about like a year or so?
He was so good his rookie year. And then
basically ever since he, like, you know, actually, no, he was still good after he walked into his debut with the cowboy hat, which is one of the most badass things I've ever seen in my entire life. But yeah, after that rookie year, it's been a steady decline. But yeah, anyways, I don't see, you know, who knows when you see Molly and Maeda back, but who knows when they can stay healthy too. They haven't shown that they can. So I think you can see Varlin get some run here. And I don't really think anybody's taking that spot from him as long as he's pitching well. And again, I think he should be, I'd rather have Miller over Varlin, but, you know, a little bit of a deeper league, I'd give Miller a look there for sure. I'm thinking, like, would you look at Varlin in the 12 teamer, Chris? I'm thinking more, I don't know about 12, maybe like a 14 plus team league for Varlin.
Yeah, I think you'd safely say 14 to 15 team league, but
yeah,
I think the stuff is there for him to be relevant in the 12. And so if you're struggling with pitching, like,
yeah, why not?
It's worth picking up and seeing, because, like, at that point, like, just churn a back roster spot, see what works. And, you know, Varlin could end up sticking, but despite the results that you've seen so far this year, like, he's been so much better than the numbers suggest.
Right. You could say that about a lot of these guys that we're talking about here today, especially these next two, Brandon Pfaadt and Gavin Stone, both debuting on the same day, which was pretty fun, but both didn't really have the greatest of results here. Let's start with Brandon Pfaadt. Went, let's see, with 4 2/3 innings, gave up 6 runs, only had 3 strikeouts. Didn't really look good at all. Fastball sat 93.5 miles an hour. Used that about 62% of the time, mixing the slider and changeup, which both had a 40% whiff rate, but gave up 3 home runs combined on those pitches, 4 total, which was kind of the issue in AAA too, right, Chris? Like, he was getting up way too many home runs. You know, overall, it's like, it was one of those, like, every time you went out, he'd be like, all right, well, he looked better than the actual line type of thing. But it's really just like the command. Like, we've seen the stuff is there. You wrote a great article in the offseason on Brandon Pfaadt over on Pitcher List, which I highly recommend everybody go check out. Like, the stuff is there. I've always kind of wondered, like, the command needs a little tweaking. Like, we saw look at the heat map on his four seam, even though he only gave up the 1 home run on the four seam. I know that. But the heat map was right in kind of where the ideal bat path is for these hitters trying to get that ideal launch angle. So I think he sees a slight tweak to the command, but the stuff is absolutely there. So if anyone's kind of thinking that Pfaadt's not as good as he advertised, I think he's still pretty good. Yeah, it was a rough debut, but the stuff is there. He sees the command it better, and I think he's going to be pretty damn
good. Yeah, it was tough to watch. It's certainly a tough spot to be in when you're debuting. And, you know, we've seen mixed bags from different pitchers when they've debuted. And, you know, Pfaadt definitely was amped up. Like, his fastball early was, you know, certain velo was up. So that was encouraging. You know, looking at the pitches that he allowed the home runs on, he left a changeup middle-middle to Leody Taveras. He left a slider middle-middle to Josh Young. He left another changeup middle-middle to Jonah Heim. And then the other one Josh Young got was a four-seam up, which, you know, it was a fine pitch. Like, it wasn't poor location, but it was down to 92-2 in the fifth inning, and he got all of that one. So, you know, the location was ultimately the issue. And I do think it's important to understand the fact that, like, looking at who Brandon Pfaadt is. And, you know, I think there was a lot of hype this offseason, like he was going to come out and be this ace type arm. That's really never who he's been. And that's okay, because when you have a starter that can go deep in the games consistently, throw a lot of innings, and strike out more than a batter an inning, there's a recipe for success here. And that's what he did last year. And what really made him stand out was the fact that he went deep in the games. He threw more innings than anybody in the minor leagues by like 25. Like he had like 167 innings, if I'm not mistaken, in the minors last year. And that just blew everybody out of the water. I mean, he had the most strikeouts in the minors by like 40 over Kyle Harrison, who is the next highest. And it wasn't because he had a super high strikeout rate. He ran like a 32% strikeout rate, which is great. But it was the fact that he ate innings. So I think about Sandy Alcantara. Like, Sandy's not an elite pitcher, but he's so valuable to fantasy because he gets so many innings. And Fott is capable of doing that. I think Fott's capable of throwing 200 innings year over year over year. And yeah, he may not be an ace, but I think the upside here is a number two starter that does have a decent pitch mix. You know, some don't love his fastball, and that's fine. Like, if you don't love his fastball, that's okay. It does have some deception to it. I do think there's room for growth. We saw the velo is up about a mile an hour this year on average, actually. He was averaging like 92.5 last year, 93.5 this year, which is encouraging to see so far. And he averaged 93.5 in that start yesterday, which was exactly what he did all season in AAA. But he just has to locate a little better. I think that he's going to be okay. I'm not overly worried about him at this point. You know, if you can buy low based on somebody freaking out about that start, then I would 100% do so, because I still believe in the larger sample that we've seen with Brandon Fott. And at the end of the day, like, I still believe in what he's done. And I mean, dude, his slider's really, really good. His slider, sorry, go on a tangent, but averaged 14.2 inches of vertical break yesterday. That, or horizontal break, excuse me. That is 7.6 inches more than average, which is pretty wild. So, like, that's a really good pitch. And I'm pretty sure, like, I want to look and see. I think it graded out really well on the Stuff Plus leaderboard. Let's see if it's up yet. I just really think that based on what we saw yesterday, I think there'll be better days. I mean, you're going to have those starts. And we saw the home runs. We thought it was the PCL, and it may still be the PCL. But at the end of the day, I still completely buy into Brandon Fott, because I'm basing what I've seen on the 20 starts that I've watched him, not just the one yesterday that we saw with him. And I think that's what too many people are doing. They're jumping to conclusions based on one start. And in doing so, they're like, okay, like, this guy's terrible. We're completely out on. Yeah, okay, so his Stuff Plus yesterday. Fastball was 100, so right at average. His slider Stuff Plus was 145, which is really, really elite. His changeup was 87, so it's not great, but I will say that Fott has a good changeup. Like, he does get some good run with that. And then his curveball, which he didn't throw a whole lot, had a 135 Stuff Plus. So overall, he's 108 Stuff Plus, which is really good. Again, a little bit of a tangent, but I still believe in Brandon Fott. I think temper the expectations. Know that he's not an ace and probably never will be an ace, but I think he's going to be a really good fantasy starter.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I think it was a little bit of both with the home run issue. A little bit of just mislocation, a little bit of the park factors and the nature of where he was pitching. Look at, like, last year, breakdown level by level. He was averaging basically right about a home run per start at every level. He was at, let's see, in AA, 19 home runs and 19 starts allowed. And then AAA, 9 home runs in 10 starts this year. AAA, 5 home runs, 5 starts. So I think it is a little bit of both. Like, we know the control was good. Like, he's never been a guy that walks a lot of batters. You know, walk rate is well below 10%, closer to 5% throughout his minor league career. But just some mislocation with all the pitches, especially the fastball too. But if he can just improve the command a little bit, like, the stuff is absolutely there. Chris just mentioned all especially the slider as well. So I'm definitely very much in on Brandon Fott as well. Gavin Stone, kind of similar, like, good stuff again, but look at his debut yesterday against Philadelphia. That's right. He went 4 innings, gave up 4 runs. Now, WHIP was 250. Only had the one strikeout there. So he's only a three-pitch guy, four-seam, changeup, slider. And really, like, that's kind of been like my thing with Stone. Like, we know that he can miss bats. You know, doesn't walk. You know, the walk rate has been a bit high, but it's not crazy bad. But the command has always seemed to be a little bit off with the Stone, excuse me. And you guys saw that yesterday. And yeah, it's one start. You know, he only threw, what was it, 77 pitches, but he was kind of all over the place with all three of his pitches. And that kind of tracks back to, you know, watching his minor league starts in AAA and AA. Command kind of seemed to get wonky at times. But another one, like, similar thing. Like, if you're worried about Stone, and like, even in my daily write-up over my Patreon, I was like, all right, pick up Stone if you can, but I wouldn't start him in this. You know, Philly's a good lineup. They get, you know, Bryce Harper back. I don't usually start many rookies in their debuts regardless, and I just didn't like the matchup for Stone. So, but long-term, I like Stone. I don't know who I like. I think I like Fott a little bit more. I think the upside is very comparable. I think Fott has a little bit of a higher floor. I think there's a better command and control profile here than with Stone. But Stone is really good stuff. He's in arguably the best or one of the best pitching development orgs in all of baseball. That three-pitch pitch, when he's commanding, those three pitches are all very good. Four-seamer is only about 93.3, but usually he locates it fairly well. And then the changeup especially is a very, very good pitch. Slider is pretty sharp as well at times. So I'm not worried about Stone either. Give him time, it's going to be a pretty good arm. So buy low on both these guys if you can, is my thought.
Yeah, so I think the concern with Stone is that when you're a changeup first pitcher, like, think Chris Paddock. Like, we talked about Chris Paddock and,
yeah,
you know, that changeup first mentality, when that's your best pitch, then, you know, you can run into issues there. And sadly, like, that's my fear with Gavin Stone. His changeup didn't even grade out well yesterday. Had an 81 stuff plus, which is pretty well below average. You know, not going to put a lot into one sample, but the stuff hasn't been great all year in reality, even in AAA. And so I won't lie to you and say that, like, I have some reservations about Gavin Stone based on what we've seen so far. And, you know, I like Stone a lot, and I've advocated that he has pitched better than the numbers suggested. But, you know, Eno's model doesn't love the stuff. Like, his stuff in AAA, stuff overall was 85.2, location of 92.5, which isn't great. And then you factor all that in and you look at what he did yesterday, and, you know, there's certainly some concerns there. Now, I think he'll be fine. I don't believe that Stone was as dominant as he was in 2022, just to completely fall off the face of the earth. Like, there's a reason that he dominated in high A last year. Then he went to double A and he dominated there. And then he dominated in the PCL for 23 and a third innings. Like, he was elite. And I don't believe that that's just going away. I think that there's more pressure on his fastball now that he's facing major league talent. Because, yeah, I mean, you can get away with your dominating players with your changeup in the lower levels, but now you have a bit more pressure for your fastball to perform because something has to set up that pitch. And if your fastball is not setting it up, then it's irrelevant. So Stone's going to have to locate the four seam a little better. Average 93.3, like, it's fine. Like, him and Fott, very similar there in that sense. But I want to see him be more than a fastball changeup guy. Like, let's throw this slider more often. The slider actually grades out pretty well on Stuff Plus. Just want to see him use it more often because I think it's a solid pitch that doesn't probably get the respect that it deserves. That's probably because he doesn't use it. So, like, he's going to have to make a few tweaks, I think, to be successful in the major leagues. But I would not write him off after the start. It's a tough first start against Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's never, you know, it's one of the best offenses in baseball. And what would have been better a week ago before our Bryce Harper return, 2 months early from Tommy John's? Is anyone really shocked by that, by the way, that Bryce Harper returned from injury early? The dude's just a beast. But yeah, I like Stone. I like Fat more. I think he's a bit safer than Stone, but definitely don't be, you know, running to sell just because of their debuts. No, they didn't look as good as Bybee or Logan Allen. I mean, it's a debut for a rookie pitcher. We've seen many ups and downs with rookie pitchers. So definitely more in the, you know, buy low than, you know, I won't be selling right now. These are still two pretty good arms here. All right, let's shift over to the major league side. Well, we already were the major league side, but to non-prospects, I should say. Started with a couple of Boston outfielders who are actually tearing the cover off the ball right now. Starting with Alex Verdugo, who I hate to use, like, you know, the younger generation slang, but he's always been like the most mid baseball player I've ever seen. Like he's always been good, like a solid player, but never really stood out. But this year, you know, he's 315, 382, 515, 5 home runs, 18 RBI, and 26 runs so far in 144 plate appearances. You know, yeah, he's been pretty damn good so far, but and a lot of the quality of contact metrics are still kind of in line with career rates. Like, first career, 39% hard hit rate. This year, 41%, so up a little bit. Barrel rate's up, like, you know, half a percentage point from his career average. The zone contact's up. That's great. He's always been pretty good zone contact. It was 90% last year. Now it's 95%. Chase has gone down a few percentage points. Same with the whiff rate. But he's always had a pretty good plate discipline profile. So that was never the issue, but the power was kind of middle of the road. And, you know, maybe it's gone up a tick this year, but I don't know. I feel like I'm more in like the sell high category here because we've seen him go on these stretches before and he always kind of evens out over the course of a full season. So he'll probably be in his, you know, 280, you know, 285 range, 13, 14, 15 home runs, handful of steals, something like that, which is kind of where he's always been. So if the person that rosters him in your league kind of has the mindset, or if you roster him and you think you can get something more than that, I would absolutely be looking to do so. I just don't see, like, I'm a Red Sox fan. I watch all these games and yeah, he's been great, but the metrics don't really support like this big breakout or anything like that. So I'd be more in the sell high camp with Verdugo.
Yeah, I think the question of where did Verdugo's power come from has to come into thought here. I mean, he's topped out at 13 home runs in a season. That was in 2021, and that was in 604 plate appearances. He had 11 last year in 644 plate appearances. So he's making more contact, but he's always been an elite contact hitter. So, you know, jumping from an 86% contact rate to an 89% contact rate isn't really going to make a difference in your power. You're not going to get to that many more home runs just because you've, you know, made more contact. Zone contact's almost up to 97%, which is awesome. Still hitting a similar amount of fly balls. And so you have to look, what is going on with Verdugo? And I think it's some early season luck. And like you said, I think he could be a good sell. The hard hit rate is fine at 41.1%. He was a 43% hard hit rate in 2021 and a 38.2% last year. And then you look at his barrel rate, 7.1%. It's fine. That's exactly what he was in 2021 when he hit 13 home runs over the season. His average EV, 89.4. Last year was 89.1, and in 2021 was 90 on the dot. So, yeah, pretty much across the board, the power metrics are pretty similar here with Alex Verdugo. And I think you're right. I think that this could be a good sell opportunity for him, but I'm not sure we see a legit power breakout here, in my opinion.
Nah, and like he might set his new career high because, you know, he only has to beat 13 and he's already over a third of the way there, a little over a month into the season. So maybe he gets like, I don't know, 15, 16, something like that. But I'd bet a lot of money he doesn't even get over 20. Like that park, he's pulling a bit more. The home run to fly ball rate's almost double from last year, but he's had home run to fly ball rates and right now he's around 13%. He's had years where he was a 14% home run to fly ball rate. He's pulling a bit more. He's up to a 40% pull rate. But again, he's done that before. Even here in Boston, his first year in Boston was almost the exact same pull rate at, you know, 40.1%. So like, this is not really anything that you can be like, oh, yeah, boom, point to that's the reason why. You know, there's little things here and there. And yeah, it's good. Obviously, you want to see him improve as opposed to these things go the opposite way. But I just don't see, maybe he has, he's going to have a solid year. Like, he's a solid ball player. I'll give him that. But he's nobody that I'm like, you know, excited about, like, oh, yeah, I have Alex Verdugo. He's not a guy you build around. He's kind of like a complimentary piece for your fantasy team, whether you're a redraft, fantasy, whatever. But the other Boston outfielder, which I'm definitely buying into right now, because he just looks different. And that's Jarren Duran. Yeah, we've seen him go on these little stretches before, but not like this. 64 plate appearances into this season for Drennan after he got recalled. 393, 438, 679, pair of home runs, pair of steals. But he, I think he's finally, and I've said this before on this show, like I saw him in Double A back when he was more of like the contact and speed profile, and he tried to, and he bulked up, tried to go the power hitter route, didn't work. I said he needed to find that middle ground. I think he is starting, again, small sample size.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guys. It is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun, too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
But it looks like he is starting to find that middle ground where the contact skills have come back. The K rate's gone down. He's down to 23.8% K rate this year. Walk rate's at a career high, 7.9%. But he still is hitting the ball very hard. 14.3% barrel rate, 92.1% average exit velo, 54.8% hard hit rate. And again, zone contact is like around 83%. You know, it's a little more than league average. And chase rate's down 10%. Huge. Whiff rate's down a few ticks as well. So he's finally getting another swing change. Now he's had a couple of these now, but this one looks to be working. Like, you just watch some Red Sox games or just watch some this video of Jaren Duran. He looks like a completely different hitter. And I think he's, you know, here to stay. Sprint speed is good as well. He's always had good sprint speed. So I think this is a guy that's going to be finally finding his groove, and I'm definitely, you know, buy. I think the arrow is still going to go up here as the season progresses.
I'm such at a loss with what to do with Duran. I do feel like he goes through cycles with this, and it's like, all right, like, we're buying in, and then it fades off. But he's doing things right now that he's never done before. You mentioned some of the metrics. He's striking out way less, for one. His hard hit rate's 55%. Barrel rate's 14.3%. These are all high-end numbers. His average EV is 92.1 miles an hour. He's doing a lot of things well. He's mashing breaking balls, which he struggled with in the past. He's hitting off-speed pitches well. He's hitting fastballs well. So across the board, like, Jaren Duran's doing things. What do you think the upside looks like for Duran?
I think he's, you know, granted, he's a lefty at Fenway, so I'm not going to go gaga over the home run total here, but I think he could be like 15 to 20 home runs, a little, you know, maybe 20 to 25 steals, something like that. I do think the average comes down, though it hasn't yet. I keep saying that. He's like at 400 all year. He's still hit 393. But I think he's more of like a 270-ish hitter. Probably never a high OBP guy. Maybe like 330. I don't know, something like that. So I think he could be a top 100 player. Is he going to be like top 50, like a stud? No. I think there is a, you know, 15 plus, 20 plus player in here with the hits for a solid enough average.
I think that's fair. I could get behind that. So I think he's still a decent buy right now. I think the price is cheap enough, and, you know, it's worth a shot to see where it goes, I think.
Right. I'm kind of like in the same line of thinking as I am with Jared Kelenic, where it's like, all right, we know the talent was there, but it just had not been, you know, translating into to performance at the major league level. And now, you know, both of them went under what, another swing and change. And now they both had a few of them over the last few years, but this one finally seems to be working. Like, he looks completely different. And let's hope it sticks. Obviously, I'm not expecting this level of production moving forward, but I do think there's a pretty good player here. So I know that price tag's already ticking up here with what he's done over the last, you know, few weeks or so, but I'm definitely 100% in on this new version of Duran. Like, he looks completely different and looks very much better. And the metrics really back it up, like we mentioned here. So moving on to an outfielder not doing so hot right now and losing playing time, Tyler O'Neill. This St. Louis outfield is so weird, Chris. Like, I can't figure out, like, what, you know, I don't even know what they know what they're trying to do with this outfield. Like, they have so many guys in this outfield. They already sent down Jordan Walker, AAA. Now O'Neill's losing time. And granted, he has not been great, but you know, 228, 283, 337 slashing right now, two home runs and a steal in 99 plate appearances. Now, he's still hitting the ball hard. That's, you know, kind of in line with previous years, but the K rate is up about 7%, up to 33.7%. You know, still whiffing too much, you know. But like the profile outside of that K rate jumping 7%, pretty much in line, you know, roughly where his career levels have been. So I'm just wondering, why is O'Neill so bad right now? Like, are you buying that he can turn it around? Is he a buy low for you, or are you kind of, you know, kind of just getting out on O'Neill at this point? He's still only 27 though.
I think he needs to be traded because
yes,
it's I can't imagine the pressure he's facing because he's gotten so much scrutiny from his manager dating back to that, you know, weird play when he was sent home when he shouldn't have been sent home and he hesitated and Ollie Marmol just bashed him. And I can't imagine the pressure that he's facing right now to perform. And I feel like that the inconsistent playing time isn't helping either. When you're struggling mentally and you're putting pressure on yourself and pressing and not playing consistently, I feel like I'd struggle too. So yeah, I'm not sure it's an ideal time to buy. Maybe I hope they trade him. I'd love him in Atlanta. Like let's bring him over this way, put him in left field. Cause I certainly believe in the profile, but he needs to get out of St. Louis in my opinion.
Yeah. They need to like trade an outfielder for some pitch or trade two outfielders for some pitching. They have so many outfielders in that team. They could use another back end. They refuse to bring up Liberatore though, for some reason. But yeah, O'Neill, I don't know. I'm definitely not fully out on O'Neill. I think that'd be foolish to be fully out on O'Neill, except he still hits the ball very hard. We've seen, you know, he's a good athlete. Speed is there as well. So I think, will it be in St. Louis though? Will he turn it around in St. Louis, or will it take a new home to get him kind of, you know, kickstart his career? I don't know. Kind of hard to say, but I'm definitely not out. So if you can buy low right now, I'm sure the price tag is pretty low because not only is he struggling, he's losing playing time. So it's like kind of like a, you know, double blow on his value right now. So definitely I would look to buy low on Tyler O'Neill if you can in your dynasty league. The next guy, let's keep it in the National League Central. I tweeted about this. Like, anytime this guy does anything positive, the fantasy industry like loses its freaking mind. That's Nick Senzel, who's, again, he's doing pretty good right now. Three home runs, two steals, 73 plate appearances for Cincinnati, 288, 356, 455 slash line. But Chris, I don't know. I just can't buy in to Senzel. First off, like the profile is, it just screams okay. Like nothing really in the profile. Like, okay, contact metrics are pretty solid. Even in the zone context, only 83%, but it doesn't strike out a lot, doesn't whiff a lot, doesn't chase a lot. All right, good. That's great. Power speed for him, it's kind of meh. 85 mile an hour exit velo right now, 5.6 barrel, 31.5% hard hit rate. I mean, I just don't get why everyone goes gaga over him. Yeah, he was a former top five pick and, you know, with top five in prospect rankings at one point, but I just can't get in, not nearly as much as other people are. So I don't know. I'm not really buying this right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of hype. It's like, okay, he's come back. He's looked really good. It's like, this is a Nick Senzel that we've been waiting for his entire career. But one, the health is a major factor. Two, he's not hitting the ball hard at all. I mean, his average exit velocity is the lowest of his career by a decent margin. Yeah, it's a small sample, but 85.2 miles an hour is third percentile among all hitters in the major leagues. 31.5% hard hit rate is 19th percentile. He's making decent contact, which I guess is good. But in the day, I'm just not sure this is a case where I'm completely buying in. Maybe it's a thing where you ride the hot streak out and see where it goes. Or if you can trade him and get something decent for him, I probably would do so. Because I just don't see a big power speed threat rest of season. I mean, his best season still remains his rookie year in 2019 when he hit 12 home runs and stole 14 bases. Only had a 315 OBP, though. Granted, he hasn't stayed healthy most of his career, so hard to say. But in 2022, He did have 420 plate appearances, and he hit just 5 home runs and stole 8 bags with a sub-300 OBP and a 306 slug. That's just not it. So I don't see anything that's tangibly changed. And for that reason, like, I'm selling if I can, and I'm out otherwise.
Yeah, let him build up this value. Give him another week or two. Hopefully he stays fairly hot. And then just, yeah, try to sell him for whatever you can get, pitcher, prospects, draft, you know, picks, whatever. Because, yeah, it just, I cannot see him sustaining success. You know, the profile is, like I said, isn't great. The durability is not there. Something's going to come crashing down here. I don't know what it's going to be, but something will come crashing down. And Senzel will be, you know, not fantasy relevant once again. It's just the ebbs and flows of Nick Senzel. So, yeah, definitely more of a sell than a buy for me right now. Next guy is a guy that I've kind of been up and down on throughout his entire, you know, career as a prospect. He was, you know, fairly highly ranked for me, but up and down. Same in the major league level. Right now, definitely up. Ezekiel Duran from the Texas Rangers. Trio of home runs, pair of steals, and 74 plate appearances. Slashing .324, .351, .507, excuse me. Has not really done a whole heck of a lot leading up to this. You know, he only had 220 plate appearances entering the season, but not a lot of success. Career slash on .258, .296, .401. He's another one that I'm more on the sell high camp. He does not walk literally at all. 1.4% walk rate this year. Never been really a big, guy with a lot of patience at the plate. Solid power and speed. I'll give him that. But Chris, where does he fit in when Seager's back? That's my question. Like, he's playing shortstop right now because they don't really have any other options to play shortstop. But he's not even really a shortstop guy. He's brought up as more of like a, I think he played some third, maybe some, I think he played some second even. Never really played a ton of shortstop in the minor leagues. Maybe he did in the lower levels, but you look at him, he doesn't look like a shortstop, but he's kind of having to play there. They have nobody else to play there. So he's filling in, but when, and one is Seager's back, like what, within a month or so, I believe. So when he's back, like, how do you think Duran fits in? Is he someone you're looking to buy into right now?
I don't know. It's interesting. He's so versatile that I think it does help because he's played pretty much every position in the field except first base and catcher, which is encouraging that he's played every outfield spot. He's played short throughout his career. He's played third, and he played mostly third last year, but really a second base and shortstop coming up the minor leagues. So just for those reasons, he is intriguing because even when Seager is back, you know, he could still play 4 to 5 days a week. Obviously not great, but he's still semi-intriguing with what he brings to the table, at least from a power and speed standpoint. He is hitting the ball much harder this year than he has in the past, which obviously has led to some more power. And we've seen that. I mean, he has 3 home runs and 74 plate appearances so far, 2 stolen bases. You mentioned the OBP. Doesn't walk a lot. I can live with a low walk rate if you make an astronomical amount of contact, but he doesn't. I mean, he's zone contact rate of 82%, overall contact rate of 75.5%. For what it's worth, those are both below average when we look at that overall. The league average zone contact right now is 85.3%. He was 82. And the league average overall contact is 76.2%. So he's just below average there, but fairly close. Like I said, if he was running 90% zone and 80%+ overall, then I could live with a low walk rate. But overall, yeah, I mean, I'm interested in at least riding the hot streak and seeing where it goes. But he's not somebody I'm like insanely high on must have type.
Yeah. And I look back, he played more short than I thought in the minor leagues. But yeah, I think he could be like a super util guy, like you mentioned, but. And they also have obviously Semien at second, Josh Jung at third, who's, you know, hitting for a good amount of power right now, hasn't played first, and they have Nathaniel Lowe over there as well. So, yeah, I think you could move in that utility role, but I just don't see any, like, long-term fantasy value. I said maybe deeper leagues, like 15+. Okay, I could see him holding some value there, but outside of that, he's more of a sell than a buy, because I just don't see, like, a huge uptick in value coming here for Ezekiel Duran. All right, moving over to some pitchers here. This first guy, Josiah Gray, probably one of the more maddening players to roster in fantasy because he's, you know, anytime you look at the top of like the whiff rate leaderboards, but especially with the secondaries, and Gray was always kind of near the top of those leaderboards. Even last year and even through spring training this year, it was kind of a similar story where the fastball would just get hit super hard Look at last year, 305 batting average against on the fastball, 742 slug and a 481 WOBA. But again, slider had a 38% whiff rate, curveball 32.2. Year before that, curve and slider were both over 45%. But this year, you're seeing him not only throw the fastball less, he dropped the usage around 9%, slider more, the slider went up a few ticks. He's kind of mixing in a cutter now as well that he hadn't used in the past. So he's really altered the arsenal. And I think the fastball usage going down has been great for him. It's even been a better fastball. 222 batting average against, 259 slug, 261 WOBA, much better. So after a kind of a rocky first start, he's looked really good here, Chris. He has five straight outings of five plus innings and two earned runs or less. K rate is actually down a little bit, but hey, the walk rate's down. You know, the ratios are way down, even though the whip still runs a little high. But I'm not like going gaga over Gray, but I'm kind of digging this. I'm digging the arsenal change, the usage rate changes, and I think he can be, you know, maybe not a stud, but I think he'd be a solid fantasy arm moving forward.
Yeah, I was very hesitant to buy in, and I didn't really believe at first, but he's doing what he needed to do to be successful, and that's throwing his four-seam less, because his four-seam got absolutely obliterated last year. And we know he allowed the most home runs in the league last year. 24 of those came on the four-seamer. And I honestly am not sure if, like, there's probably few pitchers that allowed over 24, and he had 24 allowed on one pitch, which is pretty wild. I'm going to look and confirm that because it is interesting to look at and see. But I will say, like, he's doing what you want to see, and that has led to success just based on the fact that he's changed up his arsenal and made solid strides. And yes, so there were 14 pitchers last year that allowed at least 24 home runs, and Gray's four-seam allowed 24 home runs on his own. So that tells you what you need to know about that pitch and how bad it was last year. He allowed 38 overall, which just isn't ideal by any means. But back to the changes that he's made with his profile. He's throwing the sliders the most of any pitch.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's working. He has a 168 or 163 batting average against, a near 40% whiff rate on that pitch. Surprisingly enough, his four-seam is getting much more whiff on it too. Last year, 17.1% whiff rate. This year, 30.3% whiff rate. Those are encouraging trends to see, throwing it less while also getting better results with it. And who knew? Like, this was a recipe for success here with him. But I have to wonder if his increased cutter usage has helped the four-seam a little bit. The different pitches, but still, when you're mixing in the cutter more at 89, like, you can get away with your four-seam at 93 some. So overall, I think the arsenal changes as a whole are genuinely helping him out. And yeah. I'm intrigued. I don't know how much I'm willing to go spend on him if I don't have him, but I at least put a feeler out there and see, because Gray was a very solid pitcher in the minor leagues coming up the Dodgers system. And maybe, just maybe, this is him breaking out.
Maybe. And he's given zero home runs. He's given four home runs, excuse me, so far, but zero have been on that four-seamer, one on the slider and three on that cutter. So, yeah, like, I think we're both kind of in that same line of thinking where we're intrigued. He's definitely rising up rankings. We wouldn't go crazy to go get him, but definitely has made some tangible changes that are really working for him right now. And he's still only 25 years old. He feels like he should be a lot older than that, but still only 25. So definitely buying into some degree for sure here with Josiah Gray. This next guy is kind of like the pitching version of Nick Senzel. Not to the same degree. Obviously, he's been healthier and actually done more. But anytime this guy does anything well, everyone goes gaga over him. I think I've used the word gaga way too many times this episode. But Mitch Keller is who I'm talking about here. And this year, Mitch Keller's been pretty damn good. I'll give him that. 3.32 ERA in seven starts, 40.2 innings. Got a 25.5% hard hit rate allowed, which is a lot lower than any time in his career. Actually, 10% better than any other season in his career. K rate's up to 27.9%. Walk rate's down to, you know, the best rate he's had since his rookie year back in 2019. All the ERA indicators are kind of in line. But I'll let you go first here, Chris. Are you buying into this latest kind of, I don't know if I want this latest breakout, but this latest little hot stretch for Mitch Keller? Are you buying or are you selling?
Well, it's been six. His first start was terrible. It's like, okay, like everybody was hype over spring training, and then he, you know, just lays a horrible start out against the Reds in his first start. Like, rough. 4 2/3, 4 earned, 4 walks, 8 Ks. But since then, he's been really, really good. His overall ERA is 3.32, and that's including that rough first start. And if you take out that first start, his numbers look like, let's see, get the game log up, drops to 2.75. So over his last 6 starts, a 2.75 ERA, 36 innings, 40 Ks, 9 walks. Those are encouraging numbers for sure. But, like, you have to wonder, can he sustain this? Is this legit? And I think that's the question we've always asked with Mitch Keller. Like, he goes through these hot stretches, and it's just, who is he? Is this really him? He's changed the pitch mix a little bit again. Like, every year is kind of throwing the four-seam a little bit less. He's throwing his sinker about as much as he was last year, throwing the cutter right in that range. So, you know, he's throwing, between the four-seam cutter and the sinker, we're looking at nearly 70% of his pitches. And then he mixes in the curveball, which is surprisingly doesn't get that many whiffs. And then his sweeper, which does. Like, the sweeper's probably one of his better pitches. But overall, like, you look at his arsenal and you just don't see the whiff rates on pitches that suggest that he would be a higher strikeout rate guy like that we've seen so far. And I simply just have to wonder, like, is this legit? The sweeper's really good. That gets a ton of break on it. So that's highly encouraging to see that pitch, which he's seen nearly an inch and a half more of horizontal movement on it from last year, which is certainly good. But overall, it's just like the arsenal to me is kind of meh. So who knows? Like, he's 27. Like, we've been waiting on this for a while. This is a pitcher, you're 27, entering your prime years, but Mitch Keller's been so bad for so long, it's really hard to fully buy in.
I can't do it. Like, we've seen this before. Not once, not twice, like multiple times before. And yeah, like I said, I'll give him, he's pitching well right now. There's no denying that. You mentioned that, you know, the hard hit rate's down. K rate's up. The walk rate is kept being kept in check. It's gotten out of hand at times. But, and I'm not saying, I don't think I've ever said that Mitch Keller's bad. I just don't see him. Maybe he's kind of like a middle of the road fantasy arm. A guy that could be like a top, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 arm, something like that. I don't see him even being like top 50 or anything better than that. I think this people are still kind of waiting for like that big impact season where he's like, all right, he's a top 40 arm now. He's an SP3 or whatever. I don't see that coming. Like, he's fine. That's it. Like, I just don't see the profile does not scream impact arm to me. Like, you mentioned, because he has like 7,000 different pitches he throws, none of which have like a super high whiff rate. None of them are over 30% this year. Last year, none over 30%. Year before that, cutter made just over 30%. Then, yeah, the cutter used to be over 30%. Now it's just like a bunch of pitches, which you don't have to have. Like, to have a high whiff rate in general, you don't have to have like that one huge whiff rate offering, obviously, but I just don't see him ever reaching like that next level. You know, if you can use this kind of hot stretch to sell high, I would, because I think there's a better chance that he kind of regresses back down than takes that next step. So that's kind of where I'm at with Mitch Keller. I just can't buy in. And this next guy too, I've seen this guy, used to be on my own team, Eduardo Rodriguez, who just continues dominating, had a phenomenal start today on Thursday against the New York Mets, where he went 8 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 9 Ks. But this is his, after the first 3 outings of the year, which were kind of meh, and excuse me, the first 2 outings, the last 5 outings, 6 innings, 1 run, 8 innings, no runs, 7 innings, no runs, 5 2/3, 1 run, and then today with the 8 shutout innings. But you look at the metrics here, Chris, they don't, like, they're okay, they're decent, but they're not, like, screaming big breakout from him either. And I've seen, you know, stretches from Erod in the past. He's always had pretty decent stuff, always nibbled way too much. That was what drove me absolutely insane watching Erod starts when he was on the Red Sox. And even now, when I do ever catch an Erod start now, it's like he always starts to nibble on the outside of the zone, doesn't always get those calls, gives up too much contact in general. The whiff rates have been low the last couple of years. Even this year, 21.4% whiff rate. I don't know. I think this is a sell high for Erod. I think he can be a decent, like, back end fantasy arm, but I don't, kind of with Mitch Keller, I don't see that next level. Like, the profile does not scream like breakout from Erod right now, even though the performance has been pretty dim.
Yeah, it's his last few years have been really weird. He was always, like, good with the Red Sox, but, like, he was, like, never elite per se, but he was just, like, fringe good. Like, you look at 2018 and 2019. Very consistent, 3.82 ERA, 3.81 ERA. He threw 203 innings in 2019, which was encouraging. He did not play at all in 2020, which certainly probably set him back some. Came back in 2021, threw 157 innings, but wasn't great. He's had all kinds of weird injuries. You know, he was out for the year with COVID in 2020. I don't know. I'm intrigued, but I'm not sure if I'm buying him. Because, like, last year's, like, strained rib cage, like, that's not ideal.
Yeah.
Like, there's injuries that are just kind of weird. And it always seems like he finds a way to catch one, like, especially as of recent. But, yeah, maybe, just maybe, he's back to that guy he was with the Red Sox. He's not going to pitch to this level of 1.81 ERA and a 0.78 whip, like, that's not going to happen, but I do think that he's going to be a pretty serviceable starter moving forward, and I'm interested to see where it goes. You know, right now, he's not missing enough bats, though, I think, to sustain the kind of strikeout rate we're seeing, and it's not a wow strikeout rate, so maybe I should be hesitant to say that, because it's just a 22% strikeout rate right now, but he does have 39 Ks over 44.2 innings, so I just looked at that number and thought the K rate was decent, but 21.9% K rate's not ideal, but it is kind of what you see when you look at the arsenal. He's limiting hard contact well, which is good. But overall, like you said, if he's a high threes ERA rest of the season, I think I'd probably be happy.
Yeah, I think he can get back to like where he was with the Red Sox for those handful of years where he was, 3.8-4 ERA. And back then, he was a little higher K, right? He was running like 25 or 26%. But maybe he's like 3.8 ERA and 22% K rate or something like that. I could see that. That's solid. That's pretty much league average pitcher. But I don't see, like, he's never been a guy that misses a ton of bets. Even back in those years, was never a high whiff rate guy. Doesn't have like that one pitch that he can really go to. Cutter is decent. Not a big K rate offering, but there's not a lot. That's his go-to pitch. Like, the cutter, like, whenever he was in a tough spot, back in the day, I don't remember him just going to that cutter over and over again. And he usually worked out for him. And this year, 74 batting average against, 185 slug on that cutter with a whiff rate right under 30%. Changeup's pretty solid as well. But this year, he's getting hit, but not hit hard. 320 batting average against, but only a 360 slug and a 77% mile an hour EV. So kind of a weird little, stats there on the changeup. But again, I think he's solid, but if you could sell high, I would. Look at some of the pitchers. It's kind of funny to look at these sometimes. These similar pitchers to Erod based on velocity and movement. Two of them are Martin Perez, and then Eric Lauer, and then a couple of David Prices mixed in. It's kind of a weird grouping there. But last pitcher on the list, sticking in the American League East, the Rays, as Chris put on the street, they're working the devil magic again. Zach Eflin is pitching very, very well. Another really good start today against the Pittsburgh Pirates. 7 shutout innings, 3 hits, 0 walks, 10 strikeouts. For the season in 5 starts, he's now down to a 2.25 ERA, 0.96 whip, and a 24.4% K rate compared to just a 3.5% walk rate. So he's always had like that low walk rate, Chris. We see Carrier took up a little bit here. This is a career best mark. Still not, you know, phenomenal, but a career best mark. And yeah, it looks like the Rays are working their magic again. But are you buying into it?
Yeah, it's there's tangible evidence that like what Eflin's doing is legit. The Rays just worked their ways. I mean, another good outing today, 2.25 ERA now, a sub-1 whip. It's like, this guy is crazy. He's seeing the success from an increased cutter usage, increased curveball usage, and a decreased four-seam usage, which is pretty interesting. But he's making it work overall. He's getting a ton of whiffs on the curve, 40% whiff rate on the curveball. Changeup, he doesn't throw that often. When he does, 75% whiff rate. Pretty insane there. But he's primary sinker, cutter, then curveball. Like, those are all 26% in the up usage, and they're getting good results. Like, he's not getting a ton of whiffs with the sinker, but obviously, like, the sinker is not a pitch you're going to miss bats with, but he is inducing weak contact with it, and he's locating it extremely well, which helps. When you locate the sinker in good spots, you can induce weak contact, and that's what it's there for, is to do that. You know, I think that he'll continue to be a strikeout per inning type guy. It's what we've seen so far. He's a 24.4% K rate, but 31 strikeouts in 28 innings. That's why I use percentage and not K per nine, because that's a deceiving number when you see that K per nine and a 24% strikeout rate. But regardless, the command is really, really good here. Limits hard contact, always has. I think that Eflin is legit. I'm pretty intrigued here.
And actually, Chris, we got that the K rate was before today's start. So I just went, so he's now up to a, let's see, 31 Ks. He faced how many batters today? 23. He's now up to actually a 28.4% K rate once you factor in today's start. Because for some reason on, I don't know why they would, on Savant, they update the top part, like the overall line. But then it takes a bit for like all the stuff in the next section to update. I don't know
Makes
why.
Makes more sense.
Right. But yeah, so I was like, wait, that feels a little bit low after a 10K outing. So I went back and looked to see like what it would through the four starts in this game log. And I'm like, oh yeah, that was before today. So yeah, 28.4%. And I think you can stick, you mentioned the curveball, even, you know, before this year, always got a good amount of whiffs. So yeah, Tampa Bay, obviously, why are we ever doubting them? We can doubt their ability to keep the guys healthy, sure, but never when it comes to the talent side of development. And Eflin, you know, he's not one I'm going crazy about, but definitely a solid arm. I do have a couple of shares this year, both in Dynasty and Redraft, so I'm pretty happy with that. If you were to, like, these last few guys we've talked about here, Chris, you know, rank them moving forward. Like, you got a draft of just these four guys: Josiah Gray, Mitch Keller, E-Rod, Eflin, Dynasty. How you ranking those four?
Eflin's the best pitcher for this year. I probably lean him overall. He's just 29, so in my brain, I had him kind of pegged a little older. So I go Eflin, Gray, Mitch Keller, and Josiah Gray are close. So like, it's like Eflin, and it's like 2A and 2B with Josiah Gray and Mitch Keller, and then Eduardo Rodriguez fourth.
I think I'll actually go. I think Erod's fourth for me as well. I'll go Keller third. I'm debating between Gray and Eflin. I might lean Gray over Eflin, but Erod's fourth. I just don't think there's that upside there. And Keller's just kind of is what he is. So I'll bank on a little bit of upside with Gray and go him first, then Eflin, then Keller, then Erod. But definitely an intriguing four right now for sure. But that is going to wrap up this episode. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out both of our platforms, my Patreon, Chris's Substack, for more work from both of us, including our rankings. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.